I'd still rub Sanaa Lathan's bald head while she hold that follow through.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are back to do another of the season preview podcasts here. We're going to be heading out to the Western Conference and we're going to be talking about the Portland Trailblazers, a team that didn't have a huge amount of movement in the offseason, but still lots to talk about. Some interesting things happened with them at the second half of last season. We're going to see if all that can carry over. And to discuss all things about the Blazers, I'm joined by the host of the Locked On Blazers podcast, and that is Eric Garcia Gunderson. Eric, how are you?
Doing pretty good, Josh. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back on. We had you on last season to do this. We're going to do it again, and we're going to talk about a Blazers team that is a little bit different to last season. It's not massively different from the end of the year, but from what happened mid-season, obviously things have changed with Yusuf Nurkic joining the team and changing the way that the team sort of looked. In terms of the guys that they did add in this offseason, there's really no one. CJ Wilcox came on a two-way deal. Archie Goodwin was signed today to a training camp deal, and they still do have that open roster spot, so maybe he can win that. Nothing really to see with any of those guys. Do you think that Goodwin will make the final roster, or do you think they'll go in with 14 men to start the season?
You know, I don't foresee Goodwin necessarily making the roster, just because you know he comes in with 23% career 3-point shooter. I like his talent. I was always kind of intrigued by him when he came out of Kentucky. So maybe he makes a team. Portland has been a team where they've tried to, you know, kind of rehabilitate guys. The guy that comes to mind is Mo Harkless, who kind of came over as, you know, very low value and then was able to kind of build it back up. So maybe he has a chance. I think there's a chance there, but I don't necessarily know if it's likely. But I think he'll definitely get a shot.
Harkless came over on low value because the Magic were idiots, basically. They gave him away for nothing. I couldn't believe they gave him away for as cheap as what they did. I know they weren't playing him. Their mismanagement of Mo Harkless for the 2 years that he was there was ridiculous, and the Blazers got a huge steal, and everyone worked out that, yeah, maybe that Magic front office didn't quite know what they were doing in terms of deals. The guys that left were Tim Quarterman went to the Rockets, doesn't really mean anything, but the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, off to the Nets in a salary dump deal. Nothing really comes back and nothing really is there to fill up that role of Crabb moving. So it's going to be the existing players who are going to have to step into that role. So how do you think, you know, Crabb's 20 or high 20s in minutes and 3-point shooting, who's filling that role for this team?
I think that's the biggest question, not only from a fantasy perspective, but also just a basketball perspective for this team, because they really used Crabb a lot. He played a ton of minutes for them, played late a lot, and I don't necessarily think that anybody on the roster has proven that they can fill that role. But I would assume that Harkless gets a chance. Obviously, we'll see more of Evan Turner, I think, as well. And he's not really a 3-point shooter either, but I think they'll give him more minutes, play him with CJ and Dame a little bit more like they did for a stretch of last year. And then Aminu, I think, will also get a little bit more time at three. I know he played a lot of four last year, but I think he'll get some more time at three as well, just because the Blazers have a bunch of big guys, but not a ton of wings. And then, zooming out from that, out of those, you know, kind of wing guys, you got some less heralded guys like Shabazz Napier, who is a veteran, who is a little bit more proven and seems like he has more of the trust of Terry Stotts to play more than maybe some of the other guys that could fill in that haven't really played much so far in their career.
Yeah, so the other guys are talking about Jake Layman and Pat Connaughton, who we saw Layman have that huge game to start the season where he scored 17 points in very few minutes. I think it was like 8 minutes. He hit five threes, was on fire, and then really couldn't do much else after that. He it's a struggle. And I do think that Napier's probably going to get more minutes, and you'll see maybe a little bit less of CJ McCollum in that backup point guard role, and they push him across to the two a little bit more. And you will see, obviously, more Turner, Harkless, and Aminu in that situation, but it's not necessarily going to turn those guys into great fantasy assets. I do like Harkless as a late pick. I think he gets the most minutes out of those guys. Turner's going to be an interesting streaming option for assists. We know that he can get those numbers there, while Aminu's also a decent late-round option. But I think the way that Stotts is going to run things is we're going to just see those guys play very similar minutes without one guy really, really stepping up and being a guy that stands alone and is getting 34 minutes or anything like that. They'll be more in that mid-range. Now, the draft was an interesting situation for Portland, Eric. They had the three first-round picks. They packaged two of them to Sacramento to go up and select Zach Collins with pick number 10. I like Zach Collins. I really like him from a fantasy point of view for his threes, percentages, blocks, ability at some point in his career. He didn't have the greatest time in Summer League. And while the front court is not filled with stars, it's filled with a lot of bodies. So what do we make of Collins this season? Is he going to be a guy that's an every night rotation guy? Or is he going to be sitting behind Vonleh, Nurkic, Davis, Leonard, Aminu in that front court rotation?
Yeah, I think as it stands right now, I don't foresee a role for Collins really early. I think you make a great point there. You know, maybe not a ton of star names that jump out at you, but Noah Vonleh, especially when Jusuf Nurkić came over, played really well, and maybe that's something they go back to with Vonleh in the starting lineup. He was really solid for them. Was good at kind of finishing some dunks that Nurkic set him up for, and also played some small ball five for them. And also, Ed Davis was out for a lot of the year, but I think Davis is a guy that gets offensive rebounds. The Blazers have usually done better when they're getting more offensive rebounds because they get those second shots where the defense crashes in, shooting those threes. And I like Zach Collins' defense. When I watched him in Summer League, you know, obviously he had some tough time trying to post up and do some other like traditional big man things. But I thought that his screen setting was good. I thought he was a good passer. I thought he played good defense. I like him as a player. I just don't necessarily foresee him being a major contributor this season because of all the guys that you just mentioned and Myers Leonard on top of that too. I mean, Leonard has had his struggles, but I think it would also behoove the Blazers to kind of rehabilitate some of his trade value.
With Collins, he's not going to contribute much this year. I think we're all over that. But in terms of dynasty rookie value, he's a guy that's going to slide because of that fact. And I think you should be looking at him because I think he does have significantly high value. And when I was projecting all these guys out before they ended up on their teams before the draft to see who, if they everyone played equal minutes, you know, who's game would suit fantasy best. Like, he was one of those guys that was in the top six out of those players. So by no means do you take him there, but he's going to slide and you're going to be able to get him maybe at 16 or 17 in dynasty rookie type format. So he is an interesting player there. And to add to that bunch of just front court guys, they, with their second pick, they selected Caleb Swanigan, who was one of the stars of Summer League, definitely outshone what Zach Collins was doing there. But by no means do I think he is a better prospect than what Collins is. What do you think, A, is Swanigan's best position? Is it at the four or the five? And is there a chance that he can come in and be a more useful player than Collins for this season?
I do think that Swanigan, in terms of this season, would be a more useful player. One of the things with Ed Davis that I neglected to mention earlier when we were talking about that front court is, you know, he is on an expiring contract, and the Blazers, I believe, are $4 million below the luxury tax line. And if they can move Davis's salary, they can get away from that. And so maybe that would open up some opportunity for Swanigan to step in. And I think Swanigan is a little bit more ready, mostly because he's just a very good rebounder. And he showed that. He also showed that he can shoot the three a little bit. And in terms of his basketball IQ, I think he's, you know, he's better than even some of the guys that have been in the league for a couple of years. I mean, at least from what I saw in Summer League, his instincts, his knowledge, his footwork, I really liked him in Summer League. I was a little confused about the pick at the time because we just talked about how the Blazers probably need wings. But I think Swanigan could contribute this year. And I think in terms of just this season's fantasy option, I think probably a more likely guy to contribute. And I think he's probably more of a five in today's league, just seeing how it goes. But I don't think he, you know, I think he might be able to play some four depending on matchups. But I really, so, you know, if he's playing a bigger team, like say Utah, you know, maybe you could say you plug him in at the four. But other than that, you know, I don't really foresee him playing other than five. I think five is going to be his spot in the NBA.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
I agree with you in terms of this season that Swanigan will be in there and playing more than Collins and being more impactful. But long term, it is going to be Collins, in my opinion, who's going to have the better season. He's another one of those guys that in the early type dynasty rookie drafts after summer league, it was him and Kyle Kuzma that started going like really high, like a pick 15 or 16. And I just obviously swayed by the form they showed at summer league, which doesn't always translate. In fact, very rarely translate. So I'm not holding out hope that he's going to be this, you know, superstar type talent that's going to, you know, revolutionize the Blazers roster or anything like that. But he will be, I think, more effective than Collins this season. Now, we've referenced Ed Davis a couple of times. His season ended pretty early last year due to a shoulder issue. And we sort of, I guess, referenced it here about his contract. I don't know whether he is going to be an every night part of this rotation, but you can set me straight if you think that he will be. Because given, you know, Swanigan will probably play a bit and you're going to have Vonleh, Aminu, Nurkic, Leonard, who I do think will play ahead of Davis. I don't see Davis being a guy that's in there every night.
I think I agree with you there. And last year, I felt like when they moved Aminu to the four and they were going to kind of go to that look full time, I was a little bit worried about what would become of Davis's role. And then he got hurt. And Vonleh is there. Swanigan's there. All these guys, even Collins, you know, I think we've also seen in the Neil Olshay era and the Terry Stotts era that a lot of times the young guys that have gotten a big investment, like Noah Vonleh, for instance, with the Nick Batum trade, are going to get minutes, even though maybe they aren't the unquestioned best player, but they need to get minutes to grow and on the court. And I think we could maybe see that with some of the guys on Portland. And I do think that Davis is going to be a little deprioritized. I think he's really good for the locker room, Ed Davis, but I do think that they're probably going to look to move him for salary concerns. And I think also too, you look at the roster and you look at, if I were a team looking at the Blazers roster, which guy on there would I want to take from them? And I think Davis is probably at the top of the list in terms of a guy that just gets rebounds, plays pretty solid defense, and is a pretty good guy to have on your team in terms of just a personality. So I think Davis is probably one of their more attractive trade assets, in addition to the fact that they have a bunch of young guys.
I've always liked Ed Davis as a player. I've always thought he's been in tough situations. Yeah, found himself in a nice role in Toronto, was traded to Memphis and stuck behind Randolph and Gasol, went to the Lakers, did well, and then was, you know, moved on, and just never seems to have found the right spot despite playing well. And it feels like it's a similar situation here for him. And yeah, I just don't see him being a regular every night part of the rotation. But one guy who is going to be a regular every night part of the rotation, who is going to start and is part of this group of big men, it's Yusuf Nurkic, who was absolutely fantastic for this team when he came over from the Nuggets in that trade at the All-Star break, which looks like an absolute heist by the Blazers at this point. But in true Yusuf Nurkic style, he got hurt. He broke his leg. That's been a problem with him, his lower leg injuries, knee problems throughout his first three seasons in his career. Now, he hasn't shown any of the combustibility in Portland that he showed in Denver, the complaining, the petulance, any of that sort of stuff. And that might come. We've seen a very small sample size of him in Portland, about 20 games. Do you feel confident that what we saw from him in Portland, the rim protection, the increased passing and vision, the way that everyone else played around him, do you think that there is a chance that extends for the whole season? And firstly, is his leg ready to go for training camp?
So starting with the leg, I think he's going to be ready to go. Everything that has been coming out from the Blazers and from him, and you see the videos of him working out, he's lost a ton of weight. Yeah. And I think, too, Neil Olshea has spoken about some muscle imbalances that they kind of discovered when they evaluated him after he came over from Denver. Obviously, a lot of people could see the weight that he had, but one of the things I guess that the medical staff saw was that there were some pretty glaring muscle imbalances in Nurkic that they're correcting now. So if they can get that corrected, maybe that can help solve some of those leg issues and keep him on the court longer. And that's a huge deal. So I think in terms of that, I don't think anything that has been coming out gives me any indication to think that he's not going to be healthy and ready to play. And in terms of the basketball stuff that he brought, the rim protection, all that stuff, I think that that's going to be there. He's going to be ready to protect the rim, get boards. He's tough down there. He was really solid on defense. I thought he was also really good on the offensive glass. And then in the pick and roll, I think his vision and passing was phenomenal, and I think that reflects his basketball IQ. But something in the Nurkic conversation that I feel often gets lost is the effect that CJ and Dame have on making the game easier for him and allowing him to see those passes and allowing him to make those plays that he probably couldn't have seen in Denver with guards that are just not as dynamic as those two guys. And I think that is going to stay as well. And I thought he was also a very good screen setter. I think offensively, I think he's going to be bringing a lot of value. And I think defensively, he's going to be strong again because he's healthy. I think Nurkic will be very solid for them. If they have some you know, rough patches, maybe you get a little bit worried about maybe some of those old Denver things coming back. But I think the fact that the game is just fundamentally easier for him will allow him to keep on putting up decent numbers.
He was a top 30 player in Portland once he arrived in Portland last season. Well, I don't think he gets to that level. I think he's a pretty clear top 50 guy. There is the risk of the injury and some of the behavioral issues coming to the fore, but I'm not too concerned about it. He can average a double-double. He can average two blocks. He could maybe average 3.5 to 4 assists potentially. But one thing we do have to worry about is his free throw percentage. Now, last year in the preseason, everyone was talking about Yusuf Nurkic playing for Denver. And you know, in fantasy circles, he's figured out his free throws. He can hit free throws now. And he hit 73% in preseason. Okay, that's fine. And then last season, he hit 57. And that's, so his free throws have gone from 64 in his first year to 62 and then down to 57. And while he hit 66 in the 2 months he was there in Portland, in the last 10 games, he was at 56. So he's just up and down all over the place with his free throw percentage. So if you are drafting him, just consider that to be not good. And if it becomes good, then it's a real bonus for you. But consider it something that you might have to punt that category. It's sort of borderline. You probably will if you do have Nurkic. But don't be thinking if he comes out and shoots 70% for 5 games in preseason that he's figured it out, because he is very up and down with that free throw percentage. But in the end, it all tends to go back to that around 60% mark. So we'll see how it goes. And if it works out for you, it's a bonus. But don't be taking that into consideration thinking, oh, he's going to be better. He's going to figure it out. He's going to be happier. He's going to hit his three throws. It could, but you want to bake into your estimation the worst case scenario, and that is that he goes under 60% again on 5 attempts per game, which makes him, you know, very much so a punt free throw guy. Now, we talked about Noah Vonleh a little bit earlier. Do you think A, that he starts, and do you think B, that he should start?
I think he does start, and I think given the lack of depth at the wing, I think a lot of those things, I think he probably should at this point. I think that pairing Vonleh and Nurkic was kind of a strength for them. And I think that it's probably what they should do. I think they probably won't close games like that, but I do think that, and that's been a tenet of the Terry Stotts era, is that he often doesn't, you know, finish with the guys that he starts with. But I do think he'll probably start, and I think he probably should, just given what we saw, how him and Nurkic had a chemistry. I think one of the other things that really played into that was Mason Plumlee. You know, he hasn't been in the league that long, but he is a little bit, you know, he went to college for 4 years, a little bit more on the maturity, just a little bit more mature than I think Vonleh was. And I'm not saying that as a like a pejorative towards Vonleh. Like, he's just younger, and Nurkic is in his same age group, you know, has kind of, you know, and they kind of got along. So I think from the on-court performance, and I think also from a chemistry perspective, I think it just works. So I think if I had to guess what the starting front court was going to be, I would guess Vonleh and Nurkic next year.
In the last month of the season, Vonleh played 28 minutes a game. He grabbed 8.5 boards in that time. He shot 56 from the field and 76 from the free throw line. So they're, you know, significantly high numbers, a true shooting of 61%. He didn't score much. He had low usage. He doesn't do much with his defensive numbers, just half a block and 0.7 steals. But his rebounding and his percentages, yeah, that pushed him into the top 150 for fantasy in that time. And in the playoffs, he started 2 games. He played 25 minutes a game there as well. So I do think that he starts. I don't think he's playing 30 minutes a night, but I think he'll play mid-20s a night and be a useful rebounding type of player who, if that efficiency holds, which we think it probably will, his efficiency has gone up every year of his career. And then when he was pushed into this role with the better players, he was much more efficient. I think that you can expect, you know, 50, at least 50-plus field goal percentage, and, you know, maybe pushes up to 70 with his free throws. Yeah, maybe not, but he did have that nice little run that we have to pay attention to. He's definitely not a fantasy target because his upside is pretty low. He's more of a deeper league sort of guy, but when you're looking for someone who can maybe get you 7 or 8 rebounds, there aren't generally too many of those guys that just float around, and he could be one of those players who is around. Now, we talked about Aminu, who started big chunks of last season at the 4, went to the bench later on in the season, and saw his minutes decrease over that portion. So you think that he'll move more down to the 3 a little bit this season and push his minutes back up that way?
Yeah, I think we could see him play more at the 3. I think another situation that we could see is Turner handling the ball and playing maybe a little bit of 2 and CJ playing the 1. I think we could see a lot of different combinations. And I think Aminu will play a ton of minutes, no doubt. I think he'll play more minutes than Vonleh. But I think that he will not necessarily be used in the same way that he was at the start of last year. And also, too, you know, maybe another factor in Aminu's case that you have to consider, too, is that he was ice cold and hurt for a good portion of the season. So he got hurt, which was like the first time he's really been hurt in his career, and he couldn't make any shots, which he did the previous year before. So I think they'll probably play him more at 3. I think he's still going to be a major contributor, probably the 6th man. But I do think with how Vonleh played with Nurkic, I think makes him the starter. And I think Aminu could play more at 3. But I think that Harkless, the way he played last year, probably makes him the incumbent at 3. And I think also just in general, I think Harkless is just a little bit better at the smaller type of wing players, the quicker type of wing players. I think Aminu plays better against bigger guys. And so I think from that perspective too, I think Harkless is just a little bit, there's a little bit more flexibility on the downside of the roster where, you know, on the lower side, like the 1s and 2s that he may have to guard. I think he has an easier time against those guys and can be more of a help sometimes for CJ or Dame if he's not going to be guarding one of the primary ball handlers. I think Harkless can probably take that duty a little bit easier than Aminu can.
Aminu did struggle with his shot. He had a true shooting of just 50% last season, which is horrible, especially for a big man. That's really poor. Now, he should be able to bounce back from that, but what he also is he's a triple one threat. So he's a guy that could nudge a 3 a game, a steal a game, and a block a game. I don't think he's too far away from that. It's not easy to do. I say this all the time, Eric, that, you know, only 5 guys in the NBA did that last season, but he is a player who has that potential to do that, and that has value. He's being drafted with one of the later picks, or one of the last picks in drafts, at 149 on Yahoo. And that's fine because he does have the potential to maybe crack the top 100, maybe just the top 110 with that triple one potential. And he is a very, very good rebound. He does have at least 120 rebound game on his resume, I think, from his time in New Orleans. So he can rebound the ball and add that triple one. And if that percentage comes back up, then he's ranking. And this happens at the end of drafts. If you increase your percentage by 2-3%, you can move 40 spots really easily in that back end of the rankings. And he does have that potential to do that. He just had a really poor season, which was significantly influenced by his injury. Let's talk about Harkless a bit now, because again, he was somewhat of a revelation last season, but I'm not sure. I am sure, because he dropped off significantly in the second half of the year when Nurkic arrived. You know, Dame got better, CJ got better, Nurkic got better, but Harkless was the guy whose statistics felt the brunt of that addition to Nurkic. His field goal attempts dropped a lot. His steal rate dropped also. He just seemed a little bit, out of it. He also had a stint of going to the bench. Do you think that him being there with Nurkic and being more of a fourth or fifth type of option as opposed to third or fourth did impact the way that he played? And that's going to be something that persists this season.
I definitely agree that it kind of got in the way of some things for Harkless having Nurkic there, because Nurkic was absorbing some of those touches. You know, a lot of times they would do Harkless kind of cutting back door or sometimes posting up against smaller guys. And it wasn't really a traditional post up. It'd be like he runs down the baseline and pins a dude real quick, catches it, and immediately. It wasn't like a real true post up, but he would get those touches. And I think that's right. And I think another factor, though, that played into that is that Alan Crabb played really well during that time, and he's no longer there. And I think he got a lot of minutes. So there's going to be opportunities for guys like Harkless to get those shots and get those opportunities. And I think that he'll still be a major part of the team. I think another part of that second half of the season slide with some of his stats also, I think, had to do with the fact that he had that contract incentive for shooting three pointers. I think the closer he got, I think the more it got in his head. And you could, I mean, most people have heard about that, the bonus that he got for shooting 35%. And I think I don't think you can discount that as a reason that he may have also dropped just mentally, you know, just thinking about it more.
Yeah, and the other thing about Harkless is he's a terrible free throw shooter as well. You're talking about a 50-60% guy, which is going to impact him in fantasy. And he does well defensively. He can get a steal and a block a game, but I just don't see significant upside for him there. He's going to be a really interesting waiver wire guy that can add, and he'll be on and off rosters. But I just don't think, with Nurkic coming in, I don't think he's really going to have much of a chance to crack that top 100 or put up those numbers similar to what he was doing to begin last season. Because once Nurkic arrived, he found himself outside the top 130, and before that, he was inside the top 100. And I think that's probably a more realistic expectation of what we can see from him for this season. If you had to pick one of these, this is a very deep question, Jake Layman or Pat Connaughton, who do you think is going to more be in the rotation this season as that guy who fills in some of Crabbe's role?
Man, that's a good question. I'm going to say that...
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
Layman probably is going to be the guy that fills that role. I think he has a little bit more juice with the ball in his hands. I think he can do a little bit more with it. He's bigger, but he's not so big that I would say, oh yeah, he's a 3-4 swing guy. I think he's kind of a three. I think that's the position that Crabbe usually played alongside CJ and Dame late in games. We talked about how Layman, was kind of streaky, and that's something he's going to have to, even out a little bit. But I just think the potential for him is a little bit higher. He's a little bit more athletic. He can, I think, do a little bit more with the ball. And I just think he's going to be a guy. I think he's going to be that guy. And also the fact that, they waited so long for Connaughton to pick up to guarantee his contract, and the summer league performance that he had just wasn't what you want to see from a guy in his third summer league. So I think that Layman is going to be that guy. Plus, Layman, I mentioned his size, but he's also just – he's not that bulky, and he's not like that great of a rebounder, so he's not that rugged. And I think they need a guy that can just shoot out there and kind of do maybe a little bit with the ball. So I think Layman's going to be that guy.
I agree with you. I do think it will be Layman. But let's forget about talking about these 13th, 14th men on the roster, and let's go to the number one guy. Let's go to Damian Lillard, who was absolutely sensational in the post All-Star break period. You're playing alongside Yusuf Nurkic. He He saw his usage increase somehow in that time. He was a top 10 fantasy player, averaging 29 points, 3.5 threes, 5 boards, 6 assists. So got his assists up. 1.3 steals, which is something that does really hold him back from being a fantasy elite type player. Was efficient from the field and from the line. Now, I don't say this to be offensive to him or to you or to any Blazers fans out there, but I feel like Damian Lillard fans are getting to the Jeremy Lin, Rajon Rondo, Derrick Rose phase of irrationality in terms of talking about his standing in the game. Now, you can disagree with this, but someone said to me today, like, yeah, who do you want, Kyrie or Dame for fantasy? Like, look, it's pretty close. I'd probably take Kyrie, but it's pretty close. And the response that I got to it was, you're underrating Dame. He's going to be MVP this season. It's like, well, okay, he probably needs to be an all-star first before he steps up and does that. He's obviously very much beloved in that Portland community, but can he, and if he can continue what he did post-All-Star, then maybe he moves into that conversation, but can he keep going what he did in that second half of the season over the course of an entire season? Because it was really impressive.
You know, I think Dame still has not reached his potential. That is one of the things that I do believe about him. MVP, I don't know about that, but I will say that I do think he can get better. And I think that the post All-Star break, having a guy like Nurkic there to not even just the rolling and all that stuff, but he set solid screens for Lillard.
Yeah.
And Plumlee very often was a great release valve, but did not really lay the lumber on the picks to create space for Lillard to get shots. And I think having solid screen setters is a big deal for him. And I think the fact that Nurkic could set such good screens and then also do things with it kind of created a kind of a perfect storm for Lillard. And, you know, he's going to have down weeks. When you're shooting that many threes, it's not going to always go in unless you're Steph. But I do think that Lillard really can get better, and maybe, you know, 30 points a game might be tough, but I think he can still take it up a couple of notches, because that's just the type of guy he is. That's how he works. And he's still 27. So he's right now in his prime. So I think he's going to get better. I think he is going to be a very good fantasy player. Mostly, you know, obviously his production is there, but also he shows up to work most of the time. I know he had a stint last year where he was hurt, but he plays. He shows up, and that's huge in fantasy.
Yeah, look, the last two seasons, he has missed 7 games. In each of those seasons, he was played every game before that. So he has started to become a little bit more, I want to say injury prone, but he has started to miss a couple of games. But yeah, his ability to stay healthy is really key for him. Part of the reason that I'm trying to look at why he took this big jump, because he was the 17th ranked player last year, 9th after the break. And I look, what was the cause and why did he do that? And it's because he started attempting more threes and he started hitting them at 41%. So he was taking more threes and his three-point percentage went up significantly. So that's mainly the reason. Like, most of his other numbers were similar, like 6 assists versus 5.8. The steals was a nice increase from 0.9 to 1.3. He increased his scoring by hitting more of those threes. His field goal percentage was the same. His free throw percentage, his free throw attempts, they were all the same. It was more that he took more threes and he hit them at a higher rate, and that bumped his points. It bumped his three-pointers up, and that's what jumped him up those 5 or 6 spots. So if you believe that Dame's going to hit 41% of his threes, and like he did at the end of last season, and get his scoring and his field goal percentage back up, then by all means, you can look at him at that end of the first round. But I think that at the start of the second round, there's a group of guys, like Kyrie and Dame's there, and John Wall's there, and Chris Paul might be in that zone. And they're all so close to each other that, to me, it really just depends on what you value. If you want more threes, then Lillard's going to be your guy. If you want to grab more assists, then you go with Paul or you go with Wall. If you want maybe a higher level of efficiency, then Kyrie can shoot, or he finishes at a higher rate and maybe has 2% higher in his field goal percentage. So there is differences between those guys, but they're all in that same sort of zone. But the way that Nurkic unlocked things for him and got him more of those open threes is interesting, and we'll see if he can maintain that 40-plus three-point percentage rate, because if he does, then that does open things up for him to potentially crack the top 10. Now, his partner in the backcourt, CJ McCollum, continues to be impressive. What do we look at for McCollum this season? Because he was a guy that, unlike Lillard, his numbers actually went backwards a bit in terms of fantasy numbers when Nurkic arrived. He was the 28th player over the course of the season, but after the break, he was 53rd. He saw his field goal percentage drop. He saw his scoring drop. He wasn't exactly the same. Still hit 44% of his threes in that time, which is obviously fantastic, but his other numbers, they did decline despite his minutes going up. So was he a little bit, I guess, impacted by Nurkic in a negative way? Do you think that that can be rectified this season? Or what does he add to his game this year to take it another step forward?
I think CJ, I think those numbers, I thought that CJ still had an incredible impact on the game. He commands a lot of respect from opposing defenses. So that's obviously going to, maybe lead to him getting some tougher coverages and whatnot. But I do think one of the things that they may do more of is kind of get him moving off the ball and maybe running some of those flare screen actions to the corner like they used to do with Crab, because you look at the rest of the roster, they don't have a lot of guys that can really space the court and knock down threes that you're like, okay, that guy's going to knock it down. But CJ can be one of those guys, and they may have him kind of move off the ball a little bit more, take advantage of Turner's ball handling and get him to shoot more threes in that way. So I think he might get some more off the ball looks on second units that aren't with Dame. And I think that, he may be used a little bit differently, but I do think that he's going to be strong still, and I think he's going to improve again. I think this reminds me of Dame again. It's just I think he's still getting there. He's still elevating his game, and I think the work ethic and I think his ability to understand Nurkic and kind of move with him, I think, will improve. And I really do think that he will be a very solid option and be a star again and put up solid numbers. It may be a little bit maybe less, but I do think in terms of efficiency, I think CJ, one of the things I've been saying about him is I think he is a major candidate for 50-40-90. I think he can really do that. And so if you're looking for efficiency, I think CJ's your guy.
Well, he went 48-40-90 last season, so he's not too far away from that. But one thing that did dip significantly in that post All-Star break, it actually dipped over the course of the season, but it was his steal rate. He went down to 0.5 steals per game. Now, we know in general Terry Stotts teams, they don't play the passing lanes as aggressively as what other teams do. Lillard's always had that problem. The team in general just gets fewer steals. But is that just an anomaly? Is there any reason why his steal rate plummeted? Because a drop from 0.9, or he was over one steal a game before Nurkic arrived, to half a game, we're talking about cut in half. It's a big drop, and that's part of the reason why his ranking dropped so significantly.
That's a really good question. I think with CJ, his defense, I think, is actually not that bad. I think he is a very smart defender. Really good at kind of reading screens. I don't know exactly why his steal rate went down, but part of it could have been the wear and tear of the season, playing a lot of minutes and just maybe not going as hard for some of those steals that he was earlier in the year. And also another factor could have been, if you have Nurkic behind you, maybe you want to have a little bit more integrity. You can keep that shell. But on the flip side, you could also make the same argument that that could make him more aggressive. So I think CJ's steal rate, I don't know where that goes, but I also think that he is going to continue to improve as a defender. I think he's a really smart defender, and I think he'll still be able to play the passing lanes and stuff like that. And if the rest of the team improves defensively, I think that could help him too.
Yeah, that's probably the major reason that his numbers did drop, or his ranking did drop. Yeah, his points went down, his threes went down, his field goal percentage went down in that post All-Star. But the fact that his steals dropped so much, that's what caused that 20-25 spot drop. Otherwise, it probably would have been a 5 or 6 spot drop. So if we assume that that bounces back and he's back to like a steal a game, then CJ's a really solid guy in the third round. Yeah, elite efficiency, as we talked about, high field goal percentage, high free throw percentage. If you want to go end of the second round, I wouldn't really blame you, but I probably want to let him slide until the third. And he's just going to continue to do more of that with, again, more scope to improve as well. And perhaps more minutes with Crab no longer on the team. He could maybe get to 35 or 36 minutes per game. Eric, who is your breakout candidate on this team? You can define that however you like.
Breakout candidate. I guess I mean, we talked about him already, and he kind of broke it. I think Nurkic is the guy that, yep. that breaks out and becomes like a real major contributor for fantasy people. I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be out there most nights. He's going to produce, and I think he's going to be, even if he's not on the same level that he was, I think he's really going to be a guy that's going to be a guy that they can count on and that you can count on for your team to produce and get rebounds, even if he's going to miss some shots sometimes and have some nights where he isn't making his turnaround hook shots and all that stuff, I think, or the free throws as well. But I think he's going to be consistent in being out there and getting good looks and creating looks for guys. I think he's going to be a super versatile and very useful player, and all indications are he's healthy. So I think he's going to have a real breakout season, not just a breakout 20 games.
In a punt free throw type of build, he's a top 30 player. And I think that's, yeah, if you want to take him in the third round, I talk about it all the time about centers and centers with consistent roles being harder to find. And Nurkic has got a consistent role. We know there is that risk. But if you want to take him in the third round and go, I need a center, I want my shots blocked, I want to get this double-double, I want to get his numbers, and I'm not really caring about free throws, then he's going to be fine in that back end of the third round. He is currently being drafted in the 40s on both Yahoo and ESPN. And I do think that is probably a little bit low, but I can understand why that's the case and why he's in that area. But he does have such a large upside there. I've got him marked with the breakout logo on Basketball Monster as well. I think he can become that player that finishes the season potentially inside the top 30 this year. So I would agree with you with that. If I'm looking at value guys on this team, pretty much everyone's in the right spot. Maybe you could consider Lillard at pick 18 on both ESPN and Yahoo as being a little bit low, and you go a little bit, you can go higher on him. And if you took him at 12 or 13, that's fine. CJ's going at 26 and 23, which again, maybe that's a little bit off, but it's not too far away. Yeah, Nurkic at 45, if you went into the 30s, no problem. And everyone else seems sort of right about where they are. People are taking Aminu and Harkless and Turner with their last picks. Noah Vonleh's not getting drafted, and that's sort of the way that it goes. Everyone's pretty much valued where they need to be, which is doesn't give us much value, but in the early parts of drafts, getting guys who you feel consistent or confident about that they're going to be consistent is a real good way to go. So Dame, CJ, and Nurkic, I think you should feel pretty good in those first 3 to 4 rounds of grabbing those guys. Now, before I let you go, Eric, the Vegas over-unders have the Blazers set at 42.5 wins. Do you go over or do you go under?
I have my doubts about the shooting, but I'm going to go over. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think CJ and Dame will improve. I think Nurkic is going to provide something close to what he was last year, and I think that they're going to be a solid team. I think they're probably a little underrated because they didn't make any sexy moves this offseason. The only thing they did was a salary dump, but I think at least in the Stotts tenure and with CJ and Dame, one guy has been able to step in and knock down shots at a halfway decent rate on the outside. So I think whether it's Harkless or Aminu or Lehman or Connaughton or one of these guys that eventually steps in, I think someone will be able to knock down a three on the wing when the defense is crashing on Nurkic and CJ and Dame. There's going to be so many good open shots that I think, these guys may not have the greatest three-point shooting records, but they all are pro basketball players, and if they're wide open, they're wide open. And so I think they'll get more than – I think they'll get 43 wins at least, and I think they'll make the playoffs, be one of those lower-tier Western squads, and I think they'll be a team that to go over on. So I'm taking the over.
Thank you for that, Eric. Thank you for joining me. Now, can you let everyone know what you've got coming up on Locked On Blazers or anything else that you want to promote and plug while you've got the audience held captive here?
Absolutely. Check out Locked On Blazers. We're doing it twice a week right now until training camp gets here. We're doing some fun stuff. I have some of my friends on, so it kind of is a little bit of a familiar feel for me, but then I also talk a lot by myself sometimes, going to go on some tangents, but I think it's kind of fun, and it's fun to just talk Blazers. And if you're interested in the Blazers at all, I go pretty deep on stuff and kind of dive deep with stats throughout the year, and have a good collection of guests on from the Locked On Network, people like yourself, Josh, and other writers that cover the league as well. So try to do a bunch of different type of stuff on Locked On Blazers. So definitely check it out.
go and check out Locked On Blazers. Give it a subscription and a 5-star review, and you can do the same for this podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on TuneIn, and on Stitcher, and of course on Spotify now as well. So go and subscribe. It means you'll never miss an episode, and it's a great way to support the Locked On Podcast Network. And as Eric said, all these team-specific shows, they're just going really in-depth into detail on these teams to find out the little things that you need to know that can actually help swing, or actually improve your enjoyment of the NBA and help swing your fantasy leagues as well. So go and check out Eric's podcast, Locked On Blazers, and all the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. Eric, thank you for joining me once again.
Thanks for having me, Josh. It was a pleasure.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Damian Lillard.
You've reached the high fashion hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.